Welcome to 51st Dates. I'm your host, Jolie Moore. I now know that hindsight is 20/20. This season, I'm going to share that wisdom with you. In every twice-weekly episode, I'm going to highlight one of my postcards from my Take Note, Stories of Narcissistic Abuse project and the unvarnished truth behind them. A lifetime of gaslighting and abuse are the reasons why my 51st Dates experiment was the unmitigated disaster that it was. I think it was kind of funny, a little bit tragic, but still a mess. Join me as I take on the task of finding out if my future self can forgive that person who lived through abuse and came out of the other side, still searching for a crazy, beautiful love story. Ready? Strap in. Let's go. Hi, this is 51st Dates, and I'm your host, Jolie Moore. Let's get to card five, shall we? Friend T. Why are you leaving your marriage? Me? My husband is abusive. Friend, give me example. Me gives examples. Friend, that's not good enough. I remember this so well. I have this weird thing about living in LA. So I'm in my car a lot. And any sort of conversation, podcast, or audiobook I listen to in my car really like sticks. I remember what I was hearing and where I was. So when I heard this, I was driving down off Mulholland onto Sepulveda Boulevard. I went off Mulholland, down Sepulveda, and made a left. I don't even actually know where I was going after that. But I had gone to or was going to some kind of, I don't know, sound bath, meditation sort of thing at night. And my friend Tara, so I met Tara in college in so many years ago, and it was, I wrote about this in the essay. I am not sure why I felt compelled to be her friend, but she was from New York City, or no, actually not New York City. She's from north of New York City, not Westchester. It's a whole different category of suburbs where they have no trains, so they have to drive into the city. So she was from New York, and I don't know, I felt somehow compelled to sort of like shepherd her into this world. So we were both transfer students at college. We lived in a dorm that was full of transfers and new people, so not like really that cohesive of a situation, although I didn't stay like more than a few weeks in that dorm. And it was hard. Like, she really was awkward and had grown up with parents who hadn't gone to college and really struggled to sort of fit in. And she actually had a big chip on her shoulder. And for some reason, I felt it was my job to knock that chip off her shoulder and show her that just because people were educated or had money did not make them awful people. I literally don't know why I felt like I had that mission. It's actually something I think about often. But because I feel like people are just because people have money or just because people have education doesn't mean they're bad people. But I feel like sometimes in this country, the term elitist is thrown around and not in a kind way. Look, there are plenty of people with money and education who are complete and utter assholes. You know, whatever. The spectrum and gamut is the same across socioeconomic lines and educational lines. Okay. So I really felt compelled to be friends with her. But the friendship I never felt was balanced. I don't really know how to explain it. Although when I talked to my therapist, the explanation based on how I grew up is pretty simple. I felt the need to fix her, and I don't know why she actually wanted to be friends with me. I can't answer that. But she was always pushing me to, this is so weird, drink more. She was like, you need to drink more. You need to socialize more. You need to be a different person. And it was always capped, my exodus, in the guise of, I'm trying to help you be a better person. But the truth is, obviously looking back, there was nothing wrong with that person. I didn't need to drink more. I don't know if anybody ever needs to drink more. I didn't need to go out more or socialize more with a different kind of people than the people I already knew. That was fine. Okay, all that said, I don't know. For some reason, I always think it's the movie The Big Chill. I saw it when I was a child, and for some reason, the idea of long-term college friendships, I find very compelling. The idea that you maintain these friendships from people you meet when you're like 17 to 20, and when you're 30, 40, you have these friends. So I made a huge effort to maintain relationships with tons of people I went to in college. And actually, I still have a lot of college friends. I talked to like two of them last week. But it's something that I felt really strongly about and really worked hard to maintain. So Tara got sort of in this loop of people. But she... It's one of these things, like in retrospect, I don't know. A friend of mine says she was envious of me. I'm never going to like own that because I can't sort of see that. But she never, my lifestyle is fine. Like I pay my bills, I go to work, and I do my thing. And she was always like a little bit critical, like, okay, well, you bought a house, but what does that make you? Or you bought this kind of car. What kind of person does that make you? You're engaged in this creative pursuit. What kind of person does that make you? And I realize now that I think in her mind, she would love to have gotten married and bought a house in the suburbs or whatever the city. I never lived in the suburbs. Or wrote books or whatever. In retrospect, like she wrote a screenplay and she tried to like pitch all these things for TV and stuff and wanted to do the creative pursuits, but was unsuccessful, mainly because she didn't follow through. She reminds me of my mother, actually, my mother and my ex. All these people wanted to write a book or write a screenplay or do something, but they literally never got past chapter one, which is fine. Most people don't, I think. But then that has nothing to do with me. So all these years, when I first started dating my ex, I was 21, 2, 3, something like that. I don't know. I have to think about it a little bit. And I remember there were all these red flags. And I remember calling my mother. My mother's like, it's great. Somebody loves you. You're unlovable. And I was like, great. Mom's not helpful. And then I remember calling her. Oh my God, long distance. She was living in Europe at the time. My God, the cost. This is before cell phones and free long distance. And she was always trying to convince me that I should stay in it. And all I needed to do was fix him. And if I just fixed him, then he would be a good partner. And I literally took that on. And obviously, I don't believe now that he's fixable. People with certain personality types are very fixed and inflexible. And also, he doesn't believe he needs to be fixed because he believes he's perfect. So all that said, it took me a long time, like a couple of years to like get my head around that I was in this abusive relationship because my therapist is like ping, 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 ping. And it took me like more time to get around the idea of like, I could leave the relationship. I could thrive on my own. All of that was very psychologically hard. When I finally got it together, I remember it was like December of maybe 2017. I was like, okay, I'm going to leave in 9 months. And what I needed was support from people because it was going to be a very hard thing to do. So she was one of the first people I told. So it was like December. I remember the driving because it was dark and chilly for LA. And so I'm driving this Audi. God, I don't have that car anymore. And I said to her, I really need to talk to you about something. I am planning to leave my marriage. And she like, you would have thought I was leaving her. She was like, oh my God, you can't leave. You know, this is how we're going to fix him. And we're going to get him friends and we're going to get him to like grieve for his mom who died. And we're going to like do all of these things. And I was like, okay, stop talking. What I'm saying to you, and I was very specific, I actually wrote her an email about this later. I probably could find that. I was very specific. I was like, what I'm saying to you is that I'm not going to fix it. I'm not going back. What I need is support going forward because it's going to be a very hard time. And she's like, why are you leaving? And I was like, he's very abusive. And she was like, give me examples. So I started giving examples. This part of the conversation, I actually don't know if I remember. I remember making the left on Sepulveda, but I remember all the lights, but I don't know what I said. And I kept giving examples. And she's like, that's not enough. Give me more. That's not enough. Give me more. That's not enough. Give me more. And I said something. I don't know if it was like him hitting me or something. And she was like, well, that's not great, but you can fix it. So I knew then that I couldn't go to her as like a well of support about the leaving process and like getting my head around like starting this new life. But I still felt like I needed support because I was going to need people to turn to when the going got hard, and boy, did it get hard. So I said to her, and this is when I sent the email, probably like several months later, I was traveling. I remember that. And I said to her, look, I'm not looking for advice. I'm specifically looking for support. And after I leave, I'd really appreciate it if you did not talk to him about things I say to you. I'm not like barring their friendship, although they didn't really have one for, or whatever. I just didn't want her to repeat anything I said. So, well, I guess I'll end the story. So I had moved out. I was living here. I haven't moved since I moved out. And I remember sitting here. I don't know what I was doing. Who knows? I was sitting on the couch, checking email. And I remember checking email and I get this email and it's like, it starts off with, ha, ha, ha. I just talked to your ex. And it's kind of funny because he's saying now that he wants to go to meditation or yoga or whatever I was into at the moment. And isn't that great? Because now you guys can get back together. And, you know, I feel really bad for him. And to be honest, actually, I never responded again. And I don't think she ever reached out again. And instead, she sort of decided that she needed to help him. So she like flew out. This is a woman who would not fly out for anything, would fly out to like meet him and try to support him. She's on like a group chat with him and my son. It's a little weird because she sends pictures of my ex that I think she got at my grandmother's house, my dead grandmother's house, and is like, oh my God, you're so handsome. You're so great. You're such a great guy. It's all a little bizarre. I can't quite put my finger on the reasons for any of that. And since I'm not going to call her up and ask her, I honestly don't know. But it was, it felt like a betrayal. And it was very hard to have conversations with the first people I told that I was going to leave, and they did not support me. I'm Julie Moore, and this has been 51st Dates, the podcast. If you've enjoyed this podcast, I hope you'll share, rate, and review it on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. It will help others find the crazy, beautiful love stories that I like to share. Also, please hit the subscribe button on your podcast app. If you'd like to know how this project started, my memoir, 51st Dates, is available wherever books are sold. A link is always included in the show notes. I'm also a romance writer. If you want to know more about my books, please visit joliemoore.com for more information. You can also follow me on Instagram, TikTok, and Substack at @xojoliemoore. The essays accompanying these postcards are available on Substack. You can also follow me on all social media at the same handle, XO Jolie Moore. Thanks for listening, and I'll be in your ears very soon.